We're going to say a word of prayer, and then we'll kind of go over the preface for how we're going to do the study this morning. Bow with me. God, our Father in heaven, we are so thankful for this day and all the ways you bless us. We thank you for this hour that we have to dedicate to studying your word, and we pray that we'll apply these words to our lives and be stronger, better examples in the community because of what we studied. Bless all those who are speaking this morning and all of us as we endeavor in this study. We do have those who we love and cherish who are not well, and we pray that your healing hand be upon them. We ask all of this in your son's name. Amen. All right, so if you've noticed, if you've had a chance through the chaos to look at the remaining schedule, you've got Daniel chapter 3 and 4 this morning together. This is really the only way I could make everything work was to cover two chapters at one time. And that's okay because we pretty much know Daniel chapter 3 fairly well. We've heard the story. We're going to observe a couple of things there. But to speed up the time, we're going to make some of our other applications in the sermon period. So it just worked out that I pushed two lessons into one Sunday, and that happened to be one of the Sunday mornings I was preaching. So you'll get plenty of Daniel 3 this morning. Not too much. Don't talk them into saying it's too much. But you'll get plenty of Daniel 3 this morning, and then we'll focus most of the class period on Daniel chapter 4. All right, so we ended our comments last week in Daniel chapter 2, and we observed the vision that the king had witnessed, and we got to about verse 46. So we're in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 46. Daniel chapter 2 and verse 46. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly your God is God of gods, Lord of kings, and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery." Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request to the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained in the king's court. So a lot of this is important as we roll into chapter 3. But I want us to think about this question here in verse 47. When Nebuchadnezzar says, "Truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings," was this sincere? Say that again. That's a great perspective. It may have been sincere when he said it. I like that perspective. That's being a bit more kind than I probably was in my mind. So I appreciate that. And I know we mentioned it Sunday night when I was preaching, but it's you know, the parable of the sower, right? And so maybe he did receive this message, but it just didn't take root the way it needed to. So it may have been sincere in the moment. It may have been too that this was all he knew to do, right? It was just pay homage. It's apparent. Can you really argue? Is there anybody in the kingdom that could argue against what the king had said? If the king, and we don't know how many people would have heard this, but as he would have made this proclamation, would there have been anyone in the kingdom who could have said, "Wait, Nebuchadnezzar, you're going too far. That is not who Daniel's God is"? It couldn't have been argued, right? Because it was said already by the Chaldeans, this dream and this vision can only be revealed by someone of the gods. It can only be revealed that way. And so they knew that it would come from a higher power, and now the vision has been revealed. See, Nebuchadnezzar, as he said, he didn't even tell them the dream. He made Daniel tell him the dream and the interpretation. And so what he says here could not be refuted. And then he gives honors to Daniel. Now, Daniel made a request to the king. Is there a friend like Daniel? Is there anyone who's as good of a friend as Daniel is to his people? So I'm saying that because in Daniel chapter 2, when death threats are being made on the people, Daniel receives that. He asks for a time with the king, and then where does he go immediately? He goes to his friends, right? He goes and finds his friends, and he comforts his friends to call upon their God. And now Daniel is being promoted, and great things are happening to Daniel. And verse 49 says, and Daniel made a request of the king. And who's he making this request for? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. How many people, when they were being praised and they're being exalted somewhere, would just say, thank you, king, I appreciate that, and moved on? And we jokingly sometimes say, when we think somebody's trajectory is going to lead them to being famous, what do we always say to them? Remember me, right? Remember me. Remember me when you make it big. I doubt that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had said those words to Daniel, but what did he do? When good things happened to him, he remembered them, and he made a request of the king. And the king, of course, granted that request. And he made Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained at the king's court. So they're still officers, but where they are is different. We could speculate as to why it would be different and why he wanted their location to be different. Some speculate that he wanted them out of the palace because the palace is a tough place to stay faithful because of all the things that were going on there. And now he puts these great men of faith out there with the people. But again, that's speculation. We know this, but in some way, Daniel was looking out for the welfare of his friends. We also know this, which is important in chapter 3, that they are now in different locations, right? So there is a place and a position that Daniel holds that is not the same place and position that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego hold. They would not be in the same places at the same time most of the time. Because I think we've often asked the question as it pertains to chapter 3 is, why is it it's just Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Where was Daniel? It may very well have been that Daniel was so high up that he wasn't beheld to this request of the king to bow down. But nonetheless, they weren't in the same places, and they didn't have the same occupations. Questions or comments before we dive into chapter 3? Nancy, and then we'll go to Mark. You can't have God as Jehovah God, and then you have your place too. There's a disconnect.
Yeah, if he just didn't get it, they were mutually exclusive.
Yeah, it's either God is God and I'm not. Right. Yep. He's a troubled individual. Mark. I like that. And that it helps us observe also the power of Romans 1, though, as well. So, no, Nebuchadnezzar had no upbringings to bring him to this point and know how to respond. But God says, through the Holy Spirit, as Paul writes it to Romans, is once you've recognized Jehovah God, there's only two ways to respond. One is thank you, and the other is with respect. Neither are fully followed by Nebuchadnezzar, but everyone can understand that that's the response that you have. Now, he didn't see God in the same way in which Isaiah saw God, right in the vision in Isaiah chapter 6, but you notice nobody instructed Isaiah to just bow down and do. You go to John, as John experiences Jesus in the revelation as who he is, he falls down. And you see that time and time again. that when people recognize deity for who it is, they fall down. They fall at Jesus' feet, right? Oh, if I could just touch the hem of the garment. There's humility there. That's not the response of Nebuchadnezzar, though. It's supposed to be the response.
But you're talking about people in Israel who knew God. Nebuchadnezzar didn't know who God was.
Interesting. And then you also have, rulers that would come of the Gentiles, and Jesus would say, of the Jews, I've not seen a faith such as this. But they knew how. We know how to respond to God. We just rarely get out of the way. I rarely get out of the way of my own self, right? Because I need to be exalted. So that's the transition from 2 to 3 is Nebuchadnezzar still needs to be exalted, right? Anything else? Yes? Yeah, so the Babylonians thought of themselves as gods, similar to what we see with ancient Greece, and then that would feed into what the Romans would do, is they would exalt themselves as gods. So here we have in verse 1, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Verse 2, then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the straps, the precepts, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justice, the magistrates, and all the officials in the provinces to come to the dedication of the image of the king Nebuchadnezzar had set up. This is a political stunt show. That's all this is. You notice no common citizen has arrived here willingly. This is all the king's men, right? All the yes men showed up, paid homage. This goes on today. There's no golden image, but men act like this today. They'll roll in with their paid posse that's been promised to get this and this, and we have a show going on, and there's no real respect being paid to that individual. What's usually going on in the minds of the governors and those type people? How's this going to benefit? If I show up here and I'm seen shaking this person's hand, then my back will be scratched, right? This is just paid respect is all it is for Nebuchadnezzar. But nonetheless, he needs his ego scratched in some certain way. I find it interesting. So Nebuchadnezzar does have this big head, which we've referred to now. But is it just, didn't God kind of help him in that in some ways? Because as Daniel interprets the dream, what does he say to Nebuchadnezzar? You, O king, you're the head of gold. He heard what he... All this, and there'll be a kingdom that shall come after you and you'll be destroyed. That part he probably tuned out. But the part where Daniel said, you are the head of gold, I think he heard that just right. And it is no coincidence that now as he erects this, that it's gold. My opinion, and my opinion only, I can't verify this was probably Nebuchadnezzar. This is what the statue was. May not have been. It's some image. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was Nebuchadnezzar himself that this image is made like. To observe this in 3 and verse 1, that was about 90 feet. 90 feet. So this was a huge structure, about 90 feet tall. A little less than a 10-story building. It was massive. They built this rather quickly. It's just interesting how they were... And we'll talk about this more in chapter 4, but they were really good. The Babylonians were really, really good at building and creating. And so they got this ready in pretty fast time. Here's verse 4. I said this was just political gesture. And the herald proclaimed aloud, you are commanded, O peoples. I guess if they won't respect you for who they are, for who you are, just command them to respect you, right? And just tell them this is what's going to be done. He's really showing his strong arm here, and he's commanding them. They got every kind of music, verse 6, and then verse 8. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously, the English Standard Version adds, maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Here's what's interesting. Verse 9. O king, live forever. They said that in chapter 2 as well, right? O king, live forever. That's how they address him. Is this sincere as they say that? Are they really, as they address him, looking out for the welfare and making sure they're paying homage to the king? Or are they making sure that they've buttered him up and they've showed him just enough respect so that he will know what he has to do to their enemies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They're using this language selfishly to either A, make sure that his fury is kindled against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or two, just so that they could look good in front of the king and say the words and offer lip service. I really think this had zero to do with respect for the king, but more for an agenda that they had. Here's verse 13. Verse 13 of chapter 3. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in a furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Have we ever heard of Mr. Nebuchadnezzar having a furious rage? Looks just like chapter 2, right? That's why I'm excited to look at chapter 4. Things start to slow down a little bit for him. Here's what I like about the end of verse 15. The end of verse 15. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? There's a lot going on there. What Nebuchadnezzar has just done, he's put a stake in the ground, and this is mano a mano. This is King Nebuchadnezzar versus Jehovah God. My hands. He didn't even say who will deliver you out of the fire. He said my hands. That fire is just a tool of my hands. Who will deliver you? God is often kindled to respond. And he certainly responds in this. In verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. We could learn a lot from that. I won't even have time to go over that in the sermon portion, but we could learn a lot from that. Is there any benefit in arguing with a fool? Is there any benefit in trying to explain your faith to a man of rage? We're going to notice he was out of control at this moment. We're going to notice a few other things in chapter 3 to prove that he was out of control. And what did the wisdom of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say? We have no need to answer you. This little battle that you're trying to create between you and God, you know where we're going to leave it? Between you and God. We would do well to let God whittle on his end of the stick more often. And that's what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego decided to do. Was let the Lord have his side of the stick and let them have their side of the stick. And what's their side of the stick? Faith. Faith. You believe in the Lord that he will do, and it shall be so. Verse 17. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Now, here's what I love about this. For all that they knew, this was the last words that the king would hear from their mouth. And what did they want to make sure the king heard? We're not going to serve your gods. Period. And that is a powerful testimony. They had good reason to believe those would be their dying words. We won't serve that God. Their God had told his people when he brought them out of the land of Egypt, you shall have no other gods before you. And they proclaimed that day before the king, we will have no other God before us. Verse 19, then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed. He was angry, but then it became worse as his face changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times more than it usually is heated. So it was going to be heated, but now he's turning up the heat. Literally, verse 20, and he ordered some of the mighty men of his army, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to cast them into the burning furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because of the king's order was urgent, the furnace overheated. Proof that this man is angry and he's acting in fury. The furnace is malfunctioning. I don't know what that looks like. Some of you have probably had the opportunity to work in steel mills and understand what type of furnace this may have been and how the gases work and different things, but I have no clue. I've played with a gas grill before, and I've gotten to the pilot light a little too fast, and I've seen what happens, and it'll scare you. I mean, it'll change your hair color on the front a little bit. So I kind of know what it's like, because I've been impatient with fire before, right? Here is a man full of fury who's impatient with fire, and the furnace is overheated, and that caused the flame of the fire to kill those men who took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up there. His anger killed innocent men. He did not intend that day for his servants to be killed, but because of his anger and he couldn't control his anger, they were killed. He had a temper. He had a temper and a half. And it caused all kinds of problems, and it caused these men their lives that day because he overheated the furnace way too fast. He needed them dead, and he needed them dead now. I love this. It's a battle, right? Who's going to deliver you? So here's verse 24. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire. They are not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like the Son of God." And we'll look more at that in the class period, but in many ways, it could be believed that this is the Son of God. Not the Son of Gods, but the Son of God there to help. Nonetheless, it is he is sent there by Jehovah God to save his men. Verse 27, in the stirrups, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw fire had not had any power over the bodies of these men. Their hair and their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. We'll elaborate further on that in the sermon hour. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any other god except their own." Continuing in verse 29, "Therefore I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid to ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. Amen." I don't know how sincere he was in saying that, but what he has said is true. There is no other God that could have delivered them out of that fire that day. Only the God of heaven, only Jehovah God could have done what was done. And this is the second time that their own words are fighting against them. This pagan nation knows there is a God. They have absolutely no excuse. The first time was, there is no God, or there is no human except for the hand of God that can reveal this message. And now the Acts in chapter 3. There is no other God who could have delivered them from the fiery furnace. It has to be Jehovah God. And then verse 30, "Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon." Yes, Bill.
Back up just a bit. I think it's noteworthy that these four men have come from a country that has been carried away because of idolatry. Yet they apparently are not having any part of it.
Good point. So it could have been that family members of theirs were idol worshippers already in the land that they came from. Because God did carry them away, yes, for idolatry. And now they're being encouraged and yet commanded to practice idolatry. And they said, there's no way. Good point. Good point. Let's move into chapter 4. Sorry if I didn't cover your favorite parts in chapter 3. Maybe I'll cover it in the sermon hour, but maybe not. And if I don't, let me know what those are, and I can add them to my next sermon. Chapter 4 and verse 1. "King Nebuchadnezzar, to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in the earth, peace be multiplied to you. It has seemed good to me to show the signs, wonders that the Most High God has done for me." All right, so here's what we need to know. From chapter 2, this would have been 30 to 40 years later. I realize that's a big gap, 30 to 40. Leon was here, he would probably tell you it was 37. But I wasn't there. So I'm going 30 to 40. 30 to 40. Between 30 and 40 years. A significant amount of time is really all we need to know. A significant amount of time has passed. Chapter 3 would have been close to chapter 2. Within 1 to 3 years. I closed the gap a little, right? So within 1 to 3 years of chapter 2, we have chapter 3. Now within 30 to 40. 30 to 40 years have passed. Significant amount of time. And I think that that's important to observe. Daniel now would be close to 50 years old. This is probably his personal diary that Daniel's rewriting or maybe having read to him. But this would not have been the official manuscripts of the king. The official manuscripts of the king would have been kept. And if you're into that thing, archaeological discoveries have discovered Nebuchadnezzar's writings that he intended for everybody to read. And all that he says was this: "My heart was troubled, and I struggled greatly for a period of 4 years. And I did not have control of my own kingdom, and others were ruling it for me." That he speaks to 4 years in the official writings of the king. This language has never been discovered anywhere except for in Daniel. I believe this is probably in his personal diary, because this is defacing King Nebuchadnezzar. He looks like a fool in chapter 4. And it was not very common for kings of that day to write in such a way to let everybody know, "I'm a fool." So this would have probably been his personal diary. What we're going to find is Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel, at this point in time, they've been together for at least 30 years. They are extremely close. I've already observed, and hopefully we've observed, that Nebuchadnezzar and Jehovah God are very close. I'm not saying they're best friends, and I'm not saying that Nebuchadnezzar is right with God, but they have a very close relationship. They have an intimate relationship. And at this point in time, as we observe chapter 4, we're going to see that Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar have developed a great relationship. Verse 3 of chapter 4 says, "How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion endures from generation to generation." That's exactly what was revealed to him in chapter 2, almost 30 years ago. So it's about time Nebuchadnezzar gets it, right? Verse 4, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at ease in my house and prospering in my palace." The guy still has an ego. Whose palace is it? Oh, it's his. He's at ease. Why is he at ease? For everything that he has done and everything he has accomplished. Verse 5, "As I saw a dream that made me afraid as I lay in my bed, the fancies and the visions of my head alarmed me. So I made a decree that all the wise men of Babylon should be brought before me, that they may make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then magicians, enchanters, and the Chaldeans and the astrologers came in, and I told them the dream, but they could not make known to me its interpretation." What is being written here, by the way, is being written after the vision. Nebuchadnezzar's faith is still not where it needs to be. As he saw this vision and he was alarmed, who does the first call need to be? Daniel, why do you even pay 5 minutes worth of thought to the Chaldeans and the enchanters and the magician of the day? They have let you down. You yourselves call them liars. But he's giving them a second chance. Now, we need to make that observation, then we need to observe this. He calls them in, and I told them the dream, but they could not make known to me its interpretation. Here's what's different about this vision and what we observed in chapter 2. In chapter 2, what did he say about the vision? "You have to tell me the interpretation." I guess in his old age, he's changed. He's like, "I'll make it easy for you. I'll just tell you the interpretation." If you notice here, he's not really angry at these guys. He was before. Now, most likely this isn't the same group of people. With it being 30 to 40 years later, it's a new group of enchanters, astrologers that are coming in. But then finally he's reminded of who he needs to call. Verse 8, "At last Daniel came in before me, he who was named Belshazzar after the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods." So Belshazzar is the dwelling place of the spirits of the holy gods. And obviously that's an allude to paganism. "And I told them the dream, saying, O Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and that no mystery is too difficult for you. Tell me the visions of my dream, and I saw their interpretation. As we observed earlier, something about what he says is not sticking. So the seed is being sown, and he's receiving it, but something's not sticking. Because he still has the audacity to say to Daniel, I know the spirit of the gods dwells in you. Well, that's garbage. The spirit of the gods doesn't dwell in Daniel. The spirit of Jehovah God, the spirit of the God. And you've talked about that God before. When you saw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego delivered, you spoke to that God. You need to recognize that God. When you saw the vision revealed to you in chapter 2, you spoke to that God. But still he doesn't believe in that God. Verse 10. The visions of my head as I lay in bed were these. I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong, and its top reached to heaven. And it was visible to the end of the whole earth. Its leaves were beautiful, and its fruit abundant. And in it was food for all these. The beasts of the field found shade under it. The birds of the heavens lived in the branches. All the flesh was fed from it. Why was it so great in size? Well, this represents Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom, Babylon, who had exalted Babylon to the power that they were at. God. Who is Babylon presently providing for? God's people. And isn't this a picture and a beautiful picture of providence? Of a people being provided for. What is there? Shade, protection from heat, food. Totally provided for. What this vision is showing is to the people that you're being provided for by Jehovah God. I, as Romans 13 would say, right? Romans 13 says, to this day, he still puts up people in power, and they are there. The governments are there for our welfare. And here he has Babylon, who has reached a great height to provide for his people. Provide one, judgment, yes. But also, as they are in that captivity, they are well taken care of. They are well taken care of, and God has saw to it. Verse 13, I saw in the visions of my head as I lay in bed, and behold, a watcher, a holy one, came down from heaven. He proclaimed aloud and said thus, chop down the tree and lop off its branches and strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts flee from under it and the birds from its branches, but leave the stump of its roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze amid the tender grass of the field. Let him be wet with dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts and the grass and of the earth. Let his mind be changed from a man's, and let beast mind be given to him. And let seven periods of time pass over him. The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, the decision by the word of the holy ones. To the end that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will and sits over it the lowliest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, saw, and you, O Belteshazzar, tell me the interpretation because the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation. But you are able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in you. What he is to be made known in verse 17 is still true this very day. Let's turn to Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13 and verse 1. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Every ruler who is in power today has been put into power by Jehovah God. And when you kick against them, who do you kick against? God. I have a hard time reading that any other way. And when you talk about how sorry that individual is that's in power, who are you talking against? Who are you talking against? Who? God's anointed. So the question to you is, how dare you? Who are you? God has put him in place. You live your lives to the glory of God. And as is given unto you, live peaceably among all men. When the pagan gods were being exclaimed in front of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they had one of the most arrogant, incompetent leaders standing before them and mocking Jehovah God, what did they say? We have no need to answer you in this matter. You will learn more about our God either today or in the next life. But we will not answer you in this matter. And it's high time that the people of God realize that the authority that is there exists from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Verse 2 says, therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. We will be judged for the attitudes that we have towards our leaders. And it will be either in this life or the next. And may God have mercy on us that we're not judged in the next life. For the attitudes that we so commonly portray about the leaders and the governors and the ruling authorities in our lives. May we be the people God has called us to be. And be subject to every human authority. And if anyone in this building needs to hear that message, it's me. The one who gets annoyed every time the blue lights are behind me. And I think, did they really elect this person? Shut your mouth and do your job. And what is your job? To glorify your Father who is in heaven. That all your actions may bring praise, honor, and glory to Him. Your job is not to overthrow the government that we have in place today. If that needs to be done, somebody else will do it. God's proven that to us through His Word. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4 and verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was dismayed for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king answered and said to Belteshazzar, let not the dream or its interpretation alarm you. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream be for those who hate you, and its interpretation for your enemies. The tree you saw, which grew and became strong, so that its top reached to heaven and was visible to the end of the earth, whose leaves were beautiful and its fruit abundant, which food was for all under the beast of the field, found shade, in whose branches the birds and the heavens live. It is you, O king. And here's what we need to observe for the next 3 minutes. We'll read some more of this next week, and then we'll jump into chapter 5. But here's what we need to observe. The troubled spirit that Daniel has concerning this dream. It looks as though, can't we observe, that some bad times are coming to Babylon. Some bad times. Not detrimental at this time. Because what it says is, the stump will be left, right? Nebuchadnezzar will come back into full power. But for a time, there's going to be struggles in Babylon. Was Daniel worried about those struggles that were going to happen in Babylon? Was his spirit troubled about that? No. What did he know? His God would deliver him and his God would be with him. Why was Daniel troubled? And why was his heart heavy? Because his companion, most likely, his friend, was going to be in grave danger and go through some very difficult moments. What we find here in verse 19 is he is dismayed and his thoughts have alarmed him. And he says, oh, king, I wish this were concerning your enemies and not you, king. Because Daniel at this point, maybe he didn't love Nebuchadnezzar. But he had a very close relationship. They had been through so much. They had been through chapter 2. Daniel was there in the scene, some shape, form, or fashion in chapter 3. And now 30 years have passed. And he's been there in the king's court for over 30 years. And he says, it's going to get bad, king. And he's troubled by this. And so what we see is, if anyone ever had a chance to obey the word of the Lord, it was King Nebuchadnezzar. He had the God of heaven imparting upon him visions, and he had one of the greatest prophets that we've ever read about tending to his every need And they all three had a very close relationship. Thank you for your time, and we'll finish chapter 4 and go into chapter 5 next week.